This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the economic fallout from COVID-19. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you from my makeshift home studio in Washington, D.C., as we continue to social distance. In contrast to the nation's capital, the headquarters of the Voice of America, all 50 U.S. states have begun to slowly reopen in a phased manner, even though the United States has more than 1.5 million confirmed coronavirus infections and a death toll of over 93,000. According to data compiled by the Johns Hopkins University, U.S. President Donald Trump is anxious to open the country for business. And there is no doubt that mandatory business closures have devastated the U.S. economy. More than 38 million people have filed for unemployment out of a population of approximately 328 million. According to an article in the Boston Globe, Stephanie Ebert reports that women have been disproportionately affected by the economic downturn. She says, quote, the coronavirus closures detonated the leisure, hospitality, and healthcare sectors whose employee bases skew female, unquote. Worldwide, close to 5 million people have been infected with the coronavirus, and the death toll is approaching 325,000. However, after more than 2 months of sheltering in place, with only the most essential businesses like supermarkets and pharmacies remaining open, many states across the country are at least seeing a so-called flattening of the curve, a steady reduction in infections and deaths. Most health experts say that the best way to revive the economy is to first contain the virus. Meantime, since March, the U.S. Congress has passed several coronavirus relief bills designed to provide funding to combat the virus and to help struggling workers as well as small, medium, and large businesses that have had to shut down due to social distancing policies. The CARES Act, passed at the end of March, is considered the largest one-time spending bill in modern U.S. history, possibly all of U.S. history, according to Lisa Desjardins, a reporter for the PBS NewsHour. It's worth at least $2.3 trillion and includes the so-called Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, which covers 8 weeks of payroll for most small businesses and provides $500 billion in loans and grants for large businesses. It also offers a sweeping temporary expansion and extension of unemployment benefits. Since the original CARES Act, several other bills have passed to extend benefits. The democratically controlled House of Representatives passed the HEROES Act last week, which includes another round of stimulus payments. This one would increase unemployment aid, boost food stamps, and provide at least $1 trillion for state and local governments. It is considered dead on arrival in the Republican-controlled Senate. Well, joining me to talk about the economic fallout from COVID-19 in the United States are two distinguished experts. Gabriel Horowitz is Senior Vice President for the Economic Program at Third Way. That's a centrist think tank based in Washington. And Carl Smith, he's Vice President for Federal Tax and Economic Policy at the Tax Foundation. And that's the nation's leading independent tax policy nonprofit whose goal is to improve lives through tax policies that lead to greater economic growth and opportunity. And both gentlemen join me on the program via Microsoft Teams. Gabriel Horowitz, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Carol. It's good to be here.
And I'm also delighted to welcome Carl Smith from the Tax Foundation.
I'm happy to be here.
Let me begin with you, Gabriel. Let's talk about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the U.S. economy. People are talking in depression-like terms. What is your take on the various measures that the Federal Reserve has taken, the various relief acts? What's your take on the impact overall?
Thanks for that, Carol. We really have to remember this is an unprecedented time for our nation's history. I mean, when you think about the last 9 weeks, 38.6 million people have been laid off. And that's not going to be the end of it. Our unemployment rate is almost at 15%. And then when you look at different definitions, it could be well into the 20s. And so right now, Congress and the Fed are grappling with just absolutely astounding circumstances. We'll get into this more. I think so far, their grade has really been okay, but it's really not complete yet. The Fed has unleashed a massive amount of federal support into the system, which has been great to see.
The Federal Reserve is the equivalent of our central bank.
And Congress, for all the partisanship, it passed four pretty remarkable packages in short time. The question is really going to be where they go from here. Do they continue to put the pedal to the metal and help this economy, or do they stop and really throw our economy and our nation's public health into more of a crisis?
Well, with that, let me turn now to Carl Smith for your take, Carl, on the situation we're facing and to what extent you think the government, the Congress and the White House have struck an important balance between staving off even worse conditions and public health.
What I'd say is, you know, I pretty much agree with Gabe's take on the economy. I think what makes it even more complex is the nature of the shock to the economy. It's very different than what we're used to. We're used to seeing things that result in consumers or businesses wanting to buy less and that leading to job losses. Now we're seeing a situation where government and public health concerns on the part of citizens are causing businesses to shut down and not offer as many things for sale. There's a different sort of dynamic going on, and that dynamic makes it a little bit confusing as to how to handle it and how the economy will respond when it comes back. I think the most hopeful thing, not likely, but as soon as we both reopened and got the virus down to the point where people felt comfortable going to stores felt comfortable opening, that the economy would simply resume its old path, that things would go back to normal. That's probably not going to be the case, I think, because the thing that we're worried about is that as businesses have been shut down, they haven't been able to pay their rent. Many of their workers have been laid off. In some cases, we have programs that have tried to prevent that. Nonetheless, we've had lots of workers that have been laid off. Some of them will come back through a program we call furlough. Not all of them will. And if they don't come back, then those workers won't have income available even after things get started. And that could set in motion this sort of normal recession dynamics where people don't have enough money to spend, and that's what drives the economy down. So how has the government done? So I think the Fed has done an amazing job. If you think the primary issue here is liquidity or people having enough money to stave off the period where the virus is the worst, the Fed would be the main actor, and they've done just about everything you could ask them to do. If you think that there's another issue, and I think it is an issue, that there's going to be permanent job loss, there are going to be people who are struggling to pay their rent even with all these programs, there are going to be businesses that go under, then that puts more of a role for the federal government. I think that they've moved faster than they ever have in the past. What I think has caused some concern are the potential unintended consequences from some of the things they're doing because they're so out of the norm. I think that it hasn't been as big a deal as feared, but there was certainly fear among Republican congressmen that the way we boosted unemployment insurance might have had some negative effects. And so normally under unemployment insurance, workers get some fraction, more or less depending on which state they're in, of the income they were making before. But Congress added an additional $600 a week on top of that for all workers in all states. What that means is that in many states, the average worker will be making more on unemployment insurance than they would if they were at their job. Now, that might seem okay during a pandemic when some workers have to come home, but we actually had another program called the PPP or Payroll Protection Program that was going to give money to employers to keep employees on payroll even if they didn't have any sales. And the idea there was that you would keep the employer-employee relationship together, and that would allow the economy to come back faster. And so we had one program which was understandably trying to be very generous in its unemployment insurance for people who were going to be knocked off their job for no fault of their own. But it was set up in such a way that it discouraged them from coming back to jobs where we had provided additional funding for employers to keep people on payroll, even if the store wasn't open. And so we have cases where programs are clashing like that. That's probably the biggest case. There's much smaller incidents of that that have rolled out in this program. And so I think that's made Congress, or at least the Republicans in Congress, a little wary about continuing at the pace that they've done. I do think that they understand that more probably needs to be done, but these sort of conflicts or unintended consequences have made them a little gun shy.
That's a very interesting point. So back to you, Gabe. I don't know whether you want to add or subtract anything Carl just said, but also some critics have said, you know, for all the good intentions, the implementation of the Small Business Administration has not been up to standard. You know, the Small Business Administration was supposed to administer lots of loans for small and medium-sized businesses. What's happened is that it seems that some larger businesses have been getting these loans. And so there's also a problem with that program.
Yeah, I mean, Carl's right. In terms of some of the unintended consequences and some of the design of these programs, it is far from perfect. I think what Congress tried to do was come together in an extremely short time frame and try to get as much relief as possible out to workers and businesses and other aspects of our economy. But when you unleash a rescue effort that big in that short of a time, there is absolutely going to be some errors. And I think people on both sides of the aisle here in Congress would agree with that. With regard to the Paycheck Protection Program you referenced, I think one of the biggest problems with that from the beginning was it was just underfunded. You saw the demand for that program was just leaps and bounds more than the money that was allocated by Congress in that first tranche. It was done so quickly without enough regulations in place that in addition to the just mass of applications, SBA really wasn't prepared to lend at that rate. And so what you had was private banks working with the SBA were trying to get the money out the door as fast as they can, but they were going to established businesses. They were going to customers that they've had for a long time. And one of the big problems was that just missed a lot of smaller businesses, a lot of women and minority-owned businesses. And so the program got off to a real rocky start, and there's been some good efforts to fix it along the way, but frankly, a lot more needs to be done.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are Gabriel Horowitz, he's Senior Vice President of the Economic Program at Third Way, from whom you just heard, and Carl Smith, Vice President for Federal Tax and Economic Policy at the Tax Foundation. That's a nonprofit independent tax policy organization also based in Washington. And they're joining me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing. And we're discussing the economic fallout from COVID-19 in the United States. Can we successfully revive the economy and protect the safety and welfare of our citizens? This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/Encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us at that same address on Facebook. Well, here's a big shout out to a loyal Facebook fan, Juliet Mutamba from Lusaka, Zambia. Juliet, thank you so much. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our programming. Gabe, let me begin with you once again to talk about aid for states and local governments. Aid was included, I believe, in the first CARES relief bill, but now the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is trying to include more money in this new bill, the HEROES bill, which I said is pretty much dead on arrival for now, but it would include more money for states and local governments. And the argument being is, you know, they're losing revenues because they're shutting down. Look at New York City, the economic heart of the nation, whether it's entertainment, tourism, you name it. But the state government, the local governments are suffering. They absolutely need, according to them, subsidies. Some Republican lawmakers are opposed to this. What's your take on that?
You know, we are incredibly worried about state and local governments. And I'll tell you why. When you look out over the next couple of months throughout the summer, there are a couple of just severe economic shocks coming our way. First, you know, we were talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. A lot of that support is ending in mid to end of June. And so, as Carl noted earlier, you've got this 8-week window where that program is helping businesses, but those 8 weeks are going to be up and you're still going to have reduced demand throughout the country. And so businesses are going to have another wave of layoffs coming up. Then the following wave is going to be state and local governments. Right now, Carol, as you mentioned, state and local governments are absolutely getting devastated in terms of their budgets. They're seeing far less revenue than they have. They're spending far more on frontline workers and controlling this pandemic. And because a lot of states and cities have balanced budgets, they can't run deficits every year. And so what's going to happen is they are either going to have to raise taxes, which in this economic environment is going to be really brutal, or they're going to have to cut. And cuts mean layoffs. And so the second economic catastrophe is coming down the pike. I was really pleased to see that House Democrats included a huge tranche of funding for states and local governments. I know Republicans are concerned overall about bailing out certain states. I think there's a way going forward to make sure that state and local relief is earmarked, is set aside specifically for pandemic response, so it's not being used for other purposes. But either way, it is a huge catastrophe coming down the road, and we need to be doing something to combat it.
Carl Smith, do you think we're looking at a huge catastrophe coming down the road if we don't do more to support state governments? Because as Gabe said, unlike the federal government, they have to maintain balanced budgets. So in other words, they cannot run deficits. So the question has become somewhat politicized in this election year, as you know, Carl. President Trump and Majority Leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, have sort of balked at doing this, saying the states have to buckle up, you know, making veiled references to blue states, Democratic states. So it makes it more complicated. But what's your level-headed view of the need to or not support state governments during this difficult crisis?
Yeah, so I think there's absolutely a need to support state governments. I think Gabe is right about the revenue losses. I think the political conversation has gotten a little bit confused. State and local governments in the United States altogether taking about $1.6 trillion in what we call own source revenue. That's basically taxes. So far, Congress has given roughly $574 billion in aid. Then the Federal Reserve has a program to lend $500 billion to state and local governments. And then the number, I think, that Nancy Pelosi had asked for $1 trillion, together with those two, would have been a little bit over $2 trillion, which is in excess of the entire own source revenue that states have. And so while I think everybody agrees that something needs to be done, I don't think it necessarily means that we need to do something on the level of $1 trillion. So targeting it towards sort of medical expenditures and then maybe, you know, a couple hundred billion dollars of unrestricted to allow them to do what they want. I think that's probably in the range of what would help, especially for this year. And I think what we might actually be able to get to pass.
Gentlemen, in just a few minutes we have left, back to you, Gabe Horowitz. I want to get your observations on two issues. One, the unintended consequences. I think what we're seeing with this pandemic, not just on public health, but the economy, disproportionate economic and health impacts on minority communities, the African-American and Latino community, some of whom have more pre-existing health conditions. They're more vulnerable to the virus. Some of them are also in the very jobs that are considered essential. You know, they have to go to work and they're more exposed. They're either working for the Postal Service or delivery or healthcare, and they need to be on the job. Any observations as to why and how this virus is exposing these gaps in our economy? And then, of course, we have the economy, Main Street, and then Wall Street. Now, Wall Street has taken a hit, but it seems like we're looking at a split screen sometimes between the stock market and our economy when you look at the unemployment rates.
You know, Carol, you're exactly right. This economic catastrophe is affecting everybody, but it's affecting certain people a lot more. When you think about the tens of millions of people who were laid off, low-wage workers have lost jobs far faster than high-wage workers. 40% of households earning less than $40,000 lost a job in March. 40%. And then for the unemployment rate is far higher for people without a high school degree. Latino and Black unemployment rates are also far above whites. It's been really troubling to see. Part of that is what you said, Carol. It's some of these communities are predominantly in low-wage jobs. Others are dealing with longstanding racism and discrimination in our healthcare system. It's just devastating. When I think about food and food security, now, more than one in five households here in the United States report being food insecure. They don't know if they're going to be able to have enough food to thrive. And that number is going up. You see lines at food banks here that are stretching miles long. You know, my hope is this crisis has shown policymakers, you know, not only do we need to get our economy back online, but we really need to make sure that we remake our economy in a way that's more equitable for more people.
So back to you, Carl Smith, for your take, we're seeing trends exacerbated, you know, the economic divide further exacerbated by the pandemic, the economic impacts of it, and the need, as Gabe said, for serious reconsideration of social and economic policies. How do you see it? You know, when Gabe mentioned food insecurity and long lines at food banks, I think some of our listeners who live in the developing world are probably scratching their heads. And then when we talk about trillions of dollars being pumped into the economy, which we have the luxury of doing, thank God. But, you know, this is unheard of for them. And I think they're scratching their heads. How can the greatest economy in the world be subject to these types of images?
Yes. So I think Gabe's exactly right that there's a disproportionate impact. And that's related to, I think, fundamental trends that have happened in the economy. We have some workers who have technologically oriented jobs, using computers, using technology as a fundamental part of what they do, like what we're doing right now, even though we aren't actually in tech per se. Tech is a fundamental part of how we do our job. We've seen people in those jobs get higher wage increases. We've seen them get better job security, better employment opportunities. We also see that those are the very people who can continue working during the pandemic because they can work from home. They can take, you know, other remote options. Who is getting the hardest hit from the pandemic, of course, are the people who work in less technologically advanced jobs, jobs that often require manipulating physical objects, either in manufacturing or for a customer that's sitting right in front of them. So I think that that trend is being exacerbated by this. I think that in terms of like the overall trajectory of the economy, one of the things that was encouraging before the pandemic was that we were finally seeing both unemployment fall and wages rise for people at the bottom for the first time in 30 years. And so I think the biggest thing when we come back from this, and it's going to be hard to put the consensus back together, is that that fundamental truth is still there. There are more people that can be employed in the economy than, you know, some of our economists had predicted, that we should not be afraid of actions that would stimulate the economy further, that, you know, what they'll be able to do is pick up more people who are not only unemployed, but not even looking for jobs. You only count it as unemployed if you're out looking and can't find. And my fear is, even if we're able to solve the problem of this pandemic, the fact that we've taken on a lot of debt will make people afraid to take those kinds of actions. And so my main concern for helping people at the bottom is that we maintain the consensus that we developed just before the coronavirus happened, that yes, there are people who haven't had a job for a long time, who have other problems, who can be productively employed in the economy if we can just make the economy strong enough, get demand for workers to be strong enough. We shouldn't be afraid to do that, even if it requires perhaps a little bit more debt, or if it requires interest rates that for complex reasons bankers sometimes think are frighteningly low. We shouldn't be afraid of those things.
Quickly, one more question before we go. So Gabe Horowitz, about reimagining the economy, you know, the so-called new normal, because most people say we can't really go back to normal. Air travel, tourism, even purchasing, people, you know, won't be maybe buying in the same quantities, or their habits will maybe have permanently changed. What is your view with respect to how our economy might be permanently affected by this crisis?
The point there is our economy will be forever altered because of this. That is how big this situation is. First and foremost, though, we have to always remember this started as a public health crisis. And we will not fix this economy until we get a handle on that public health crisis. So we have got to get a vaccine, and we have got to figure out treatment for this. Once we do, what I would love to see the government do is a big and bold focus on helping people absorb shocks better. And that's going to mean a whole new and modernized safety net. You know, when it comes to healthcare, how do we ensure that everyone has coverage and that we finally cap costs? So no one is hanging out there anymore alone without proper healthcare coverage. How do we modernize our unemployment system so people get the benefits they need without some of the unintended consequences that Carl mentioned? We've got unemployment offices using 60-year-old software. That just shouldn't be happening in a 21st century economy. How do we give people more of a stake in their company so they can, you know, when corporate profits rise, you know, the working men and women see a little bit more of that. And, you know, how do we connect everyone to 21st century technology like broadband, you know, both connect and have them afford it? So I think there is a whole lot we can do to have a much more modern and robust safety net for all Americans.
All right, a silver lining in the coronavirus cloud. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of the program. I'd like to thank my guest, Gabriel Horowitz. He's Senior Vice President of the Economic Program at Third Way, and Carl Smith, Vice President for Federal Tax and Economic Policy at the Tax Foundation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.